Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. During this segment, we're going to be talking about the GRACE Project, and here to help me do that, from Michigan Tech, the Assistant Professor of Geography, Don Lafreniere. Hi. Welcome again.
Hello.
And also Leah Ryuta. She's a junior at Calumet High School, and Mike Rowland, who teaches technology at Calumet High School. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Don, let me start with you. If you could give me an idea of what the GRACE Project is.
Sure, absolutely. So GRACE stands for GIS, which is a computer mapping program that we use. So GIS, resources and applications for career education. So what this is a statewide project with partners both at Michigan Tech, Eastern Michigan University down in Ypsilanti, and then school districts and professional GIS organizations around the state, where we are providing training, teacher education, training and advancement, and an opportunity for young people around the state to learn about using these mapping technologies to make a difference in our community.
So what is GIS?
Yeah, so GIS is Geographic Information System or Science, and it's a suite of tools and data that we use to be able to map and analyze the built and natural world. So we use it all the time to be able to understand everything from predicting floods to managing urban or rural sort of infrastructure. So making sure we have the plows in the right place and at the right time, and making sure that FedEx uses it to make sure that all of our packages get where they need to go. And so it's a pretty ubiquitous technology that...
Yeah, a lot of us are familiar with Google Maps.
Yeah.
GIS technology is what makes the Google Maps. So all the information that we have loaded into Google Maps came through a GIS package to put all those placements in there, all the information of the roads and where they sit on the globe. That's all part of the GIS technology.
So when I think about GPS, like on my phone or something, this is part of it, but it's only part.
GPS would be one slice. So the maps that you upload into, when you upload the latest update to your GPS device, comes from the GIS software. They put the new features, maybe there's road construction that's going on, and so the GIS software creates that map, and then the map companies upload that map into their GPS devices.
Hmm. Don, when just from what you're describing, it sounds like, well, why do this study in an area where our GPS, just to go back to it, is so unreliable? I mean, why use... What makes our area a good test subject for this?
Well, we're doing it across the state, I guess, to be specific. So we're doing it all over the state, but the particular interest in doing it here in our region is because we don't have as many opportunities for students to learn about GIS. So there may be in other communities, so we're trying to provide that opportunity. But also, because we're spread out over a large geography, we have lots of little towns here and there all across the Keweenaw, being able to coordinate our resources and being able to be able to map things is kind of important. We don't have, for example, a lot of communities, larger communities, urban communities will have GISs built by the municipality, and they use that to manage their resources, and we don't have that. And so through this program, one of the things that sort of came out of it was recognizing that we have a need for mapping things like our parks and our sidewalks and the quality of our streets. And that is helping the not only to build data, but to actually make some decisions and help our local municipal leaders make some decisions about how to improve our communities.
Well, how do you go about collecting that data?
There was a program called ArcMap on our iPads that the interns used. And so we collected data by going around town or through parks, and so we could plot points where we've collected certain features, such as where the park benches were in different parks, or maybe if we felt safe in a certain area, the condition of the sidewalks and the roads and the amount of people we saw and stuff like that.
Well, why was it important to have youth take part in this project?
Well, from a research perspective, this doing inventories like this or mapping the environments that we live in is not particularly new. What is having youth actually do it. So we often, when we do studies about the impact of sort of our communities on our health and our well-being, they tend to be focused on adults. And so the how these things impact children and youth more broadly is something that we don't know a lot about. Even less so having the youth themselves make those observations and being able to use the technologies and learning not just how to collect the data, but also how to analyze that data, learning different scientific techniques for asking questions and doing work with it, and then communicating that data back to the community and learning how to talk about their communities and what they learned is a big piece of the project as well.
So, Lee, what are some of the things that you noticed while you were doing this research?
I noticed that the condition of the sidewalks were not so great in certain areas, but in commercial areas where there were more people and where it was busier, that the conditions were better. I also noticed that some of the people maybe were a lot more friendlier in town than outside of town, maybe in the more residential areas that are neglected almost in beautification. And yeah.
So did you find that there was a correlation between how well an area looked and then how the people were that were living there?
Yeah, I did notice that maybe an area seemed to be more pleasant if there were more people around, just because there were it wasn't being so neglected.
All right. Well, I'm going to come back to that, but I want to have Mike jump in here because, I assume Leah is one of your students up at Calumet?
She's one of my former students, yep, going on to bigger and better things, more advanced classes. I teach a lot of the freshman and sophomore level classes, but, I get most of the kids in.
So, go ahead. Oh, it just says, how are you using this project and its findings in your teaching?
Well, I've been doing GIS in my classroom pretty much ever since I've been teaching up in Calumet in some form or another. So, and the reason why I use it is because it allows kids to look at their world in a different way that we might not be able to get a chance to in other classes. It allows them to look at data that we bring up. The DNR has tons of spatial data available for the citizens out there in the spatial data warehouse. So kids can bring up satellite imagery of their camps, their property, of the town, and we can look at different features. And so I use it to have them get a different look at our community and look at the data. And now specifically with this project, my students now get to step outside of the classroom and become citizen scientists. They can actually go and we have pictures of the kids going around and looking at trees and plotting on a map each of these different trees and why that mattered to them, why they took the time to notice that tree, or if someone had plants outside of their house, or if they were taking the time to make their community look better. Because one thing that we've noticed during the past years, we tend to be losing some people out of our community, especially our young people. When they graduate from high school, they have a tendency to leave and not come back sometimes. And we want to keep, especially our quality kids, we want them to want to come back and be proud of our community. And that's some of the things that was really cool about this, is my students, high school age students, able to go out and actually be a part of a decision-making process, to gather the data, to be a part of something and look at some advanced algorithms, if you will, that step-by-step process to manipulate the data and bring it together with a comprehensive plan of how we can make a difference.
Now, I may not understand the algorithms, but I know it's a simple fact that fresh eyes can oftentimes notice new details. And from somebody who came to this area as an adult, I know that there's a lot of young people or people that have just lived here for a long time. Things tend to get blurry. Because they're used to seeing things. And this sounds like with this project, these young people, Leah and the other people that were involved, you're going out and probably looking at things and noticing things in detail, maybe for the first time, even though you've lived here your whole lives or may have. You start noticing those things that, get missed when you just drive past them all the time. Is that what you found?
Yeah, for sure. I didn't notice things like, I don't know, how beautiful Lorium was, and the nature of our community, really. I didn't notice that how much work that people have put into it, like the architecture of the buildings, and it's really gorgeous. And I think that we should maybe take a moment to acknowledge the area that we live in.
Don, let me talk to you a little bit on how is this information that was collected being used?
Right. So the students did two primary projects this past summer. One was to go around to 38 different parks in Hancock, Houghton, Calumet, and Loriam, and map the parks in great detail. The Western UP Planning and Development Region, what we often know as WPDR, which has their offices here in Houghton, is charged with helping municipalities create recreational plans for, you know, 5-10 year plans for how they're going to manage update their parks and other recreational facilities. So the students went around and created an inventory, which we had never had and WPDR never had, in order to do those recreational master plans. So the data that's being collected is actively right now being used by WPDR and the municipalities to update their master plans for our parks and recreational facilities. The other data set that the students collected was a very detailed sort of inventory of the buildings, the streets, the street trees, the lighting, and the general social conditions, the use of the streets in and around Calumet and Loriam. That information is getting prepared and put together and going to be made given back to the village of Calumet and Loriam and Calumet Township.
I know Calumet and Loriam, and certainly down here in Houghton Hancock, have a number of parks, and some of them are fairly well hidden. If you didn't know where the Calumet Lions Park is, right, you know, you may not ever go there. And then once you go there, you go, wow, this is absolutely beautiful. Looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And then even the park over by the George Gipp Arena that has the playground there.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's been there, but it's a pretty neat little playground to have in, you think of, you know, Loriam these days doesn't have a whole lot because there's not a lot going on in Loriam with its population decline, but they still have a really great, you know, hockey arena there and a really nice park for, you know, kids to be able to play at. Those are some of the things that you were looking at as well when you're talking about the inventory?
Yes, yeah. Over the summer when we went around and looked at all the parks, I never realized just how gorgeous Calumet, the Lions Park was. And I also didn't notice, like, how many parks there are around in our community. That there's actually a lot to do around here if you just really put your mind to it and just notice that what we have here.
What about on the flip side, though? Did you notice some things that were deficient that were maybe were could be, you know, problems for residents living here?
I did notice that, like, the parks, some of them were neglected and they weren't in as well as of a condition as some of the other parks, and so same with certain areas in the community, just where if you compare the residential to the commercial areas to where there aren't a lot of people, you can notice that there are some places where there are where there's more damage to the sidewalks and just to the area compared to the more populated areas.
One of the interesting things that the kids did is when they were looking at the buildings, they would know it if it was an abandoned property or a vacant property, and they would have observations around those areas, what it looked like in general terms. And, you know, as residents, we don't think much about that because we see, like you said, we kind of get blurred to it. We see it every day, but we have a huge tourist industry that matters to us up in our area. And some of this data we can use to analyze, well, where did the kids think that it could use some help, some things that we could do to help make this area look a little more attractive. And so some of this data can help us as community members say, well, maybe if we just did a little bit of a paint or spruce this area up, we've got a block away, there's some beautiful buildings, and you know, especially when you're looking at some of our older downtown districts, which a lot of our downtown development authorities are trying to spruce up and improve upon, now we have the perspective of the kids. Because a lot of times it's families that are coming up, right? And if we want that whole package, so the whole family says, wow, this is really cool. They look at our architecture and our buildings all the time. Now we have our actual residents that we're noticing, oh, well, this is kind of cool. Or, man, maybe we should try to do something about this area. Because we do have a lot of, you know, brown zones and dilapidated buildings just because of the financial cost of redoing a lot of these historical areas. But they're still important to us.
Right, and it becomes a, you know, a question whenever you're looking at which has more value, progress or preserving history. And you know, certain areas are very valuable in preserving that history. Other places, you look at what's there and think, well, a nice new drugstore might look pretty good in this corner, you know, replacing what's there. But that would, you know, even the ruins that are in some places are, you know, loved by a lot of people to try to preserve them.
And that was one of the observations. They were observing how many people were around these areas. They were actually looking at if this place was well-traveled, well-visited, or if it was not so much. And one of the things that I think the data is going to show is all the stuff that we typically think of as a busy area, like the Calumet Theater, yep, sure enough, they're busy. But one of the things I remember, one of the kids did a report, a presentation, and you get, you know, I mentioned it just a little earlier, a block away from some of these things, and it just goes downhill real quick, and the traffic dropped right off, you know.
Yeah, so one of the things that we ask the students to observe when they're walking around is, you know, how did they feel in these places? Did they feel safe here? Were these places that they would want to hang out with their friends and you know, either recreate or just, you know, just these spaces that they want to hang out in? And it, some of these ruins and dilapidated spaces, there's some characteristics about them that make them feel unsafe. Maybe the amount of them, the amount of maybe blight or lack of care. Others are actually play spaces. You know, these are places that teenagers and other young people want to be used regularly as play spaces. And we don't know a lot about that. And that's why we want to, you know, we want to get the youth perspective on this, because as adults we think we know what youth and you know, middle school to high school students want as a place to hang out and play and socialize, and it's better if we ask them. And so now we have a better perspective on some of that.
Well, let's take something like downtown Calumet, and I take Calumet again because I'm a Calumet resident. And at Leah, so during the daytime, walking down Fifth Street in Calumet, beautiful, absolutely gorgeous, nice, you know, architecture on the buildings, several shops that are open up as you walk down. If you ever take that walk same time about 1 o'clock in the morning?
No, and I do not want to.
It becomes a different town.
Right.
You know? And so you're observing those kinds of things. So, you know, what data do you record, you know, with that kind of information?
You can notice the types of people that are walking, or not exactly the types of people, but how many people there are and how your interactions with them are like. If they come up and ask you, how's it going, hey, what you doing, then that would be considered a positive interaction. But if someone is, say, just flat out rude, then you would label that as a negative interaction. And so you would also notice maybe the lighting and interactions.
Mm-hmm. And that data can be used how, Don?
So what we're doing is we're providing that data to organizations like Main Street Calumet, for example, that is working very hard to try to make downtown Calumet and that strip on Fifth, you know, a year-round destination. You know, make it a destination both on weekends and weekdays. And then the overnight is while we didn't record overnight information in this particular season, I think by at least having what they do know about now, they can use that information to understand where they need to focus their efforts. You know, where do we want to attract investment? Which buildings are the ones that we want to try to attract someone to come and you know, open a business in? Not that they're not all valuable, but we know that there's certain areas in which a little bit of effort, like Mike was talking about, to kind of soften the edges and make it slightly more appealing is going to bring more traffic. And so we saw there's particular streets and blocks where there's a lot of activity. There's lots of people. The people are generally having a good time or shopping or interacting with each other. And there's others where that's less the case. So.
And pull the conversation a little bit away from my hometown in Calumet, and let's focus here on Houghton and Hancock. You know, now I see a lot of positives with, you know, they have the beautification committees that are doing with a lot of volunteers making it look real nice. It feels really safe. Houghton, again, listed as one of the, you know, safest places to live. And so they're doing a lot of things right. And you're taking a look at those, what they're doing right, as well as looking for areas or opportunities to improve too, correct?
Yeah, we didn't do Houghton and Hancock this past summer. That's going to be okay. The effort of next summer is to be looking at Houghton and Hancock. So, yeah. Right. So last summer we were focusing on Calumet and Laurium, and next summer we're going to do the same. Repeat the study here.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. The last part I wanted to talk about is, okay, where does the project stand now, and what are you working on at
right.
this point?
Right. So I want to also just mention that these are internships that the students do. They're 6 weeks long. They happen in the summer, and educators like Mike work with the students to learn some basic GIS skills throughout the curriculum during the school year, and then they come and join a group of us with educators, with Whoopiter, and a number of faculty and students at Michigan Tech, and work for 6 weeks. And they're actually paid internships. So students are being paid to do this work, to learn about GIS, and to go out and learn how to map their communities and make a difference. So next summer, the internships will start in July and run for 6 weeks, starting probably the second week of July. And we're looking at doing a similar study where we're going to look at Houghton and Hancock and the walkability of those two communities for students to be able to walk to school, to be able to walk to recreational opportunities for those of in our community who are elderly or have other mobility needs. How are they going to, you know, what areas could we target to improve the walkability of our communities, both the downtowns and the residential areas?
Well, yeah, how did you get involved in this in the first place?
Well, I remember learning a little bit about it in Mr. Rowland's classroom, and my friend took up the offer the year before I went, and then so I was interested. I thought that I should really explore my interests and see if what exactly I could potentially go into as when I'm older. And so I took it, and I really liked it. It was really a great experience.
How do you think you'll use it, or do you have plans?
I'm not exactly sure what I want to do once I go to college, but I think that this skill to learn is versatile. Really, it can be used in any field almost.
And Mike, so does your next class have an opportunity to do it next year?
Yeah, we'll be starting my GIS unit again in my class for this fall in a couple weeks. And I'm always looking for the kids that seem to have the tendency to be, they might be pretty good at this. So I always put that in the back of my head. And when time comes around, when Don gives me the call and say, okay, let's start thinking about the summer, I pull up that list of kids and say, hey, would you be interested in this? And it just keeps feeding into our community some kids that actually are going to get some problem-solving skills, a way to look at things objectively, and just give them some potential career path stuff too. You know, that's where that career education comes in. So many different businesses and industries use this technology every day for planning, you know, pipelines to where they're going to put the latest Walmart or the latest drugstore, that it has so many different applications that these kids could use it for.
What sorts of technology are the students using when they're doing this research?
A lot of the data crunching is on a desktop computer, but when the kids went out, they were using iPads that were GPS-enabled. You can get apps on your mobile phone. If you want to be a citizen scientist, you could bring up the app on your cell phone and mark different things and make your own story map or add to the Keweenaw Time Traveler. You go onto the website, go to the Keweenaw Time Traveler and put the information that you know about a certain spot. So there's with today's digital world, there's so many different ways you can use that technology, you know, handheld, desktop, cell phones, whatever it is.
Don, is any of this information or is going to be compiled and made available to the public? Are they going to be able to see what the results are?
Yeah, so a lot of the results are already online, and you can find them if you go to our other project's website, which is at KeweenawHistory.com. So if you go to KeweenawHistory.com, and there's a link there on the homepage where you can see a number of what we call story maps, which are sort of like digital exhibits or displays of the data and the results. And each of the students made one of these. We've got them for the last 2 years worth of internship programs. There's 24 stories up there that show maps and data and information and photographs and the results from all the work that the students have been doing.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming on the program. And Leah, good luck to you. It sounds like it was a great learning experience.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.